In today's episode, I had the amazing opportunity to talk to Nikki Deloche and Megan McNulty, the writing team behind True Justice. Now, these women are actors, these women are writers, but they are so much more than that. They are amazing individuals. They are so authentic. They are so transparent. The stories they told me, I was already a fan. I am now a crazy fan. We had about 45 minutes scheduled, and they took the time. We talked for close to 2 hours. I had to cut them off because I had my interview with Lisa Hamilton Daly. I would have talked to them all day, and they would have talked to me. They were so fascinating. We have just over an hour for you today, but trust me, you're going to love getting to know them. They share some really intimate stories. This was one of my favorite podcasts I've ever recorded. I think you're going to enjoy it too. This podcast was created by fans for fans and is not affiliated with or sponsored by Hallmark or the Hallmark Channel. Okay, so today is an absolutely amazing day here on Hallmark Mysteries and More. We have Nikki Deloche and Megan McNulty, the writers, the creators of True Justice, Family Ties. Hello, hello.
Hi. Hello, Eric. Thank you so much for having us. I know. And thank you, everyone who's listening.
Yes, I am beyond thrilled. So, as you know, one of our things is we're a mystery podcast. So what we really focus on are the mysteries. And so when you guys came out and you wrote it, it's like, oh, great. Because we've been following Curious Caterer for a while, too. But Nick has gave us, you know, extra reason. And then you've been so nice, you know, commenting back and helping support our Instagram and everything. That's been fantastic. And Megan, I feel like you're my BFF now because you're like the most responsive, nice person in the history of Instagram.
You said what my partner was about to say.
Eric, she is so responsible and so responsive. I kind of, my head lives in the creative cloud constantly. Like you can ask Megan, like I'm like, you know, I'll wake up at 4 a.m. and I'll voice text Megan. Like, I think I figured out the second act, or I have another, like Megan will wake up on many mornings to like 4 voice texts from me whispering into my phone of like creative stuff. And it always starts with either don't hate me, but, or hi, it's me. Megan's like, who else would this be?
First act.
Yeah. So my head lives in, like this, and Megan tethers our work relationship to the ground. Like she tethers us and she anchors us. And she's like, okay, these are the items that we need to address. These are the people we have to get back to. And I'm like, yes, yes, you're right. Absolutely. We have to do these things. I'm so grateful. You know, we have strengths, both of us. And we always say better together because honestly, without her, like literally I'd be floating in the clouds somewhere and, you know, have a lot of great ideas, but like no structure to execute them probably. And she, so like she has her strengths and I have my strengths and together we really do, nothing's perfect ever, but we do kind of make the perfect partnership. So you nailed it. She is so responsive. It's amazing.
I bet you're feeling terrible right now, huh, Megan?
What? No, I mean, no.
With all these compliments? I know, I'm just flooding her with compliments.
No. And she, and waking up to those ideas and then, you know, I'm like transcribing them, but also Nick is not giving herself enough credit for. Also, you know, we do it all together, but there are areas where we just compliment one another. And like she said so beautifully, nothing is perfect, but we found a pretty perfect
partnership. We're really lucky. Partnerships can be so hard. It either like really, really works or it's a struggle, you know, because so often I believe in any kind of team building or partnership or anything like that. And this happens at all varying levels of a creative process.
Sure.
Oftentimes ego gets in the way with so many people and ego can look like a lot of different things. Ego can look like I'm right, you're wrong. Ego can look like insecurity. Ego can look like, you know what I mean? And luckily, and I I think this is just who we are, but also we met in acting class and in our, I was in my late 20s, I think, when we actually met in acting class. I think I was like 28 or something like that. And our acting teacher, you know, very much hammered home to all of us, leave before every class, we would circle up and she would say, leave ego at the door where ego belongs. Because ego being the great killer of creativity.
And it really is.
Yes, ego being the great killer of creativity. And I think that being implanted in us as up and coming in this industry, as being actors, but also creators, is a big reason why it does work. That makes any sense.
Yeah, I mean, actors and writers and creators are never known for having big egos.
Never.
Tell me about it, Eric.
So, yes, I mean, that is obviously, like you're saying, having a partnership and all that. I could see how that, the ability to complement all that is obviously the most critical aspect, obviously the talent and everything like that. But if you're not complementing, you're probably not creating.
That's right. Ooh. I love the alliteration.
It's great. We love alliteration. It's a marriage, really. I mean, it's a testament to that we're supposed to be doing this together and we're supposed to keep day by day together because, you know, it's the fact that we haven't torn each other's heads off and we legitimately laugh and cry and do all the things together like every day. And we're so happy to see each other. And it's actually funny little tidbit about like it being a marriage because we're so involved with each other's families as well. How could we not be? But like my husband will frequently come in the room and it's always, hi, Nikki, we're on together.
Hi, Stuart.
No, you have your actors, but then you have your producing, then you have your writing. So it's just like one job, another job, another job, kind of, you know, it's not just linear 9 to 5, go home.
No. And
do our better than that.
I feel like, and then there's also the kids and family, which is a whole job. And then for me, it's Children's Hospital and Alzheimer's Association and Mind What Matters, which is another organization I'm involved in. And it's a lot of jobs. There's a lot of jobs, all great jobs. They're amazing jobs. We're so lucky, but like, yeah, it's a lot.
And unfortunately, there's still only 24 hours in the day.
I was just
no matter what we do.
Do in one day. And you just have to be intentional about doing that day. But congrats on, you know, only a year in the podcast and look what you're doing. It's awesome.
I know. And I've got you guys on here. So look at how we've started. So ironically, this will be for you, Nikki. Our very first guest we ever had was JC. And I remembered I was trying to get up the nerve to like ask someone to be on there. Cause I was like, no, they're actors. They're just going to not want anything to do. You know, I'll say, hey, we have this brand new podcast. Are you willing to be on it? And so I sent her a message and she's like, yeah, sure. I'll be on it. And she is the most lovely person. She's been
on
twice.
Isn't she amazing?
So her and Benjamin Ayers have both been on twice now. So no pressure for you guys to come make a repeat performance after one of your other ones come out.
I will also have to come on before the next Curious airs or after the next Curious airs.
That's in like a week. Well, not really, but it's a month. It's next month.
I will. I'll have to do that. Those are two people who in the Hallmark universe that you spoke to are two of my absolute favorites and gems. I'll start with JC. She is actually a very dear friend. And I love working with her so much. It's such a gift. We laugh so much. We have the best time. Talk about no ego between the two of us. I will often go, you know what? I think this, like, give her the line that is the joke line. You know what I mean? I'll be like, which normally a number one is not going to give up the punchline. But that's her character. That's her character. Her character is that like kind of witty, like, you know, and so I'll often say like, I think this should be your joke. I think this should be yours and give this to her, you know, and we talk about that. Like it often doesn't happen where you have that kind of like, ego-free, creative zone. But that is Curious Caterer, top-down. That is Curious Caterer. Paul Ziller, who has directed the last three, he directed this last one as well, has zero ego. He operates from a place of, you know, just, I want to work with people I like. I want to tell stories. He loves directing. He loves the process. You can come to him with any idea, no matter what it is. He's so open. He's so like, yeah, give it a try. Let's see if it works. Like, he is the most egoless director I think I've ever worked with. So it starts from the top down. And then Andrew and we just want to make a good movie and have fun while doing it. So we, you know what I mean? Like, you take that line, I'll come here. Actually, I don't even need to be in this scene. We had a scene in this last movie where Andrew was like, honestly, Nikki, I'm having a really hard time with this moment with you being here. It makes me feel like I'm kind of being a jerk in this moment. I said, well, what if I'm just not in the scene? He's like, that would be great. And I was like, great. So like, you know, I went to Paul and I was like, Andrew's having a little struggle with this. My fix is for me to just not be in the scene. And I was like, what do you think? And Paul was like, I think that's correct. Great. So just, you know, that's kind of how that flows. And so we have a really good time together. And then Benjamin Ayers, I mean, he is just such a wonderful human. Not only is he, in my opinion, one of the best actors that we have on our channel, he is such a good person. He is always about giving back. He's so deeply altruistic. And what you get is what you see. There's no front. There's no performative nature about him. He's a real authentic person. And I find that that is such a breath of fresh air, especially in our business. So you talked to two of the best.
So we just, today's Thursday, and today's podcast actually is our top five sidekicks. And Andrea had hers, I had mine, and Marla was my favorite one. She is, and the best thing, and this is gets into a bigger picture. I told Nikki earlier, we're talking to Lisa Hamilton Daly about the whole mystery channel now that it's dedicated mystery. And one of our big things is every mystery should at least have three episodes. And it's because like the first one sometimes is just clunky. And that's once again, like I told you how I was a little nervous with the True Justice and all that. But then you build and you build. And that was the thing with Curious Caterer. Like the Curious Caterer, the first one, kind of liked. It was okay. You know, it was a good one. John Christian Plummer, fantastic writer.
He's a fantastic writer.
And so we liked where it was going, but, you know, it wasn't like our, you know, hey, this is our favorite movie. This is going to, you know, supplant. But then that second one, the character is just so much more developed. The relationship's so much more developed. And that's where I just love the bond that Goldie and Marla had. And then it just took off from there. Yeah. Like I said, I think the Goldie Marla bond is just the best in all of Hallmark mystery.
I do too. And I will say, the only thing I will tease is that for the fifth one,
jumping way ahead.
You will see a lot of Marla and Goldie, and that'll be really fun for our audience, but especially for those who love the sisterhood between those two characters.
Definitely.
Yeah, it'll be really fun.
By the way, my whole question thing is just shot, so we're just going to be
let's
just
talk.
It's just basically going to be riffing today.
Great.
All right, so Megan, my first thing I had for you though is, so I look at your IMDb, and first of all, I will say your shoes in that picture, unbelievably great shoes. Go to your IMD and look at your outfit with those shoes, killer.
Oh, that is such an old picture.
But forget that. So I know you have like big old hair and everything going right there, right? But you look at it, you have your acting credits, you have like, you read the bio and you're talking about like tutoring and all this other stuff you do. So my question I have for you is, you're going to this party and you're all dressed up and you meet somebody and they're like, so what do you do? Like, how do you like not take up their entire night for 40 minutes explaining the 60 different thing? Like, what do you say like you do when someone meets you?
It's a great question. And I've never been asked it in that way.
That's true.
It's a great question. I have honed in on the lack of a better phrase, multi-hyphenate of it all as the years have gone by. But whenever anyone has asked me that question, right when I got out of UVA, when I got my master's of teaching, or when I was running my tutoring business, or when I was coaching predominantly, or now that I'm predominantly writing, it's always been, I'm an educator at heart. That's my number one thing. I'm an educator at heart. And now I say I'm a writer and I act here and there, but I'm a storyteller and I create stories and I'm an educator at heart, because I will always find a way to teach or mentor. And that's a big thing for Nick, Ian. I'm so used to calling you Nick, and then I'm on these things and I have to say Nikki.
You can say Nick.
She knows me as Mega, which is my nickname from the studio we met at, because we met at our studio, and Nikki was actually teaching me when I met her. So we met in that realm. And it's such a big thing to us to mentor others as we move along, as we have been mentored. So that the answer to your question is, I always say I'm an educator, and that has looked different through the years. I did get my master's in special ed. That's what I was going to do. And I was going to act later. I moved to Manhattan and this tutoring business fell in my lap. And that was just like this divine thing. And I thought, oh, well, then I can audition whenever I want, because I'm doing this thing, right? And I'm teaching a kid how to read, and then I'm helping them with their college essay, and I'll audition here and there, right? And then that went on for 20 years. So I did it for 4 years and then moved out here. And that's a whole nother story, as I'm driving from student to student, from, you know, the Valley to the Palisades, and running to auditions in between and changing outfits and all this stuff. But that just allowed me to continue my passion, right? So that was great. And then when the writing organically fell in my lap, which is another story, you know, I kept doing the tutoring as long as I could. And then when my kids needed me to, you know, teach them how to read in those phases, it kind of phased out. But at the exact time that Nikki and I were really starting to come together. So I still keep it in my life because of Nikki. I get to teach at UCLA. It was a job she had and kind of passed off to me. And so I'm in the midst of that semester now. I have two classes left. At Warner Laughlin Studios, where we met, I ran programs for, gosh, 11, 12 years. I still coach. And I just make it work into our schedule now. But right now, this is my predominant thing. This is what we do every day. We write. And when I can fit that stuff in, I do. I have some clients that are very dear to me, and I always find ways to fit them in. Nikki is one of them. but that's the answer. That's the long answer to your question. Is I say I'm an educator, but that's, we're educating as we're writing too. As you know, we, like I said, we try to mentor others. So it comes out in all different forms.
Okay. So you say you're running all around in Manhattan, you know, between your things, doing an audition, then you're up in LA and you're running around doing all that. So what's your craziest audition story?
Oh gosh. I was just telling this one the other night. Well, one of them that actually relates to...
I guess that can be aired out in public.
Yeah, no, they're nothing bad. I mean, I do remember what Nikki's heard this, and it's what got, it relates to what we do now. I was working for a particular family, very, very dear family, and I showed up like in a like black bodysuit dressed as a cat. I was like playing a woman who thought she was a cat for an audition for, I think, a CSI or something. And I showed up and I'm like in this ridiculous outfit, but we've got to go get ready for the whatever, the history test, the calculus test, whatever it was that day. And that particular dad, who's an angel to Nikki and I now both, you know, was like, this is fascinating what you do. And I'm like, sorry, I'll go change. I'll be very focused on your daughters. He's like, no, I'm very fascinated by what you do. And I think we should start writing stories about this and taking this out. And that was that seed was the inception of what we're doing now. And again, it was just beautiful alignment of what I guess was supposed to be in our lives. Not I guess, I know. So that was kind of funny. I also had a story where I had to kiss my husband's cousin in a Kay Jewelers commercial. That was really uncomfortable. We just had a double date with him and his wife the other night, and we were laughing about that. Yeah.
Yeah. So along those lines, I can relate, because my wife is a twin, and we were at her sister's house once, and I learned my one lesson of never approach your wife when her sister's around from behind and
oh,
do
gosh.
The inappropriate
oh, gosh.
Thing, because
oh,
I
gosh.
did make the mistake once. And yeah, so
I almost did a spit take with my smoothie. Yeah. That is amazing.
So it was bad because an instant it happened. She turned around and I realized wrong one. And yes.
There you go.
Whatever. All right. All right. And so Nikki, you also have an interesting career because you can go back, you're a Mouseketeer.
That's correct.
In a sense, obviously.
That's right.
And then you look at your IMDb and you have like all these, you know, crazy parts. You know, you're tall blonde, you know, you're like in House Bunny, you're like just randomy things. And then all of a sudden you're now Perfect Catch. And now you're a queen of Hallmark who, you know, just has this big, huge, you know, identity with that now. So when you first had like the Hallmark come to you, what were you thinking as far as like, did you realize, wow, this is going to just be this whatever 10-year career thing with this one network?
Well, you know, I did my first Hallmark movie because my grandmother asked me to. And my Nana, I call her Nana. And I was on a show called Awkward at the time. Incredible show. If you haven't seen it, it's so funny.
That's my next question.
It's a half hour single cam comedy, but it, you know, it's a little raunchy. It's a little, you know, oh yeah. And my grandmother would just be like, I just wish you would do a Hallmark Christmas movie. I mean, just something nice and, you know, that my friends can watch. I can't tell my friends to watch this show. And so I would do anything for my Nana. She is truly the reason that I get to do what I love to do. And so I said to my agent at the time, I said, do you think that we could make a call to see if, you know, I could do a Hallmark Christmas movie or something? And sure enough, Christmasland came along. And it aired. It was the last Christmas movie to air that Christmas season. It did really, really, really well. But I was in my hometown. Church service, couple nights before Christmas Eve. It was the Christmas church service, and the pastor, you know, it's a big deal when the pastor sends it's a Southern Baptist church. So when the pastor sends everybody home to watch my Christmas movie, you know, it's a big deal. And the reaction that I got from my hometown people regarding me doing this Hallmark movie was something I'd never seen. I mean, I started in this business when I was 7, and I've done everything from all forms of television, from 1 hour drama to half hour comedy to single cam, multicam. I've done, you know, sweet, I've done raunchy, I've done, you know, really dramatic, I've done film. I've never seen this reaction. The joy that poured out of them, how happy these movies made them. I got chills all over my body, which is my sign. It's like my angels. That's how my angels say, like, that is true, or there's something there, or pay attention to that, or go in that direction. And I had spent a lot of time up until then producing. I took a year off from acting to take this job as a creative executive at a production company. So I was like, I want to be in the business with these people, with Hallmark. I want to make people feel the way that these movies are making them feel. And I have an intuition that this is going to blow up. Like, if this is how this is making people feel, only more people are going to want to feel this way. I want to be a part of making people feel this way. Went into my old management office at the time. They basically laughed me out of their office. I was like, all right, fine. I'm going to go in there and still pitch my stories. I want to be in business with these people. And sure enough, they bought some of my ideas. And then I was able to start producing for them. And then they started hiring me more. Never could I ever have imagined that that would turn into, you know, 8 years later, a Hallmark Hall of Fame movie, getting to write for them, getting to be a part of the director's program, getting to produce for them, getting to do, I never imagined it would be this. I'm so grateful that it is. I have had an incredible 8 years. Not only do I love working with the people that I love, like everybody I work with, I love, it's just such a beautiful work environment. I love making movies that make people feel the way that they do, these do, but also it has been a beautiful situation with my family. As many people know, I had a son born with multiple heart defects. I was coming off of a hit show. The thing that I had fought, I worked so hard my whole career for, which is that hit show that then is the springboard to get you to that next hit show, right? So I come off of it and I am testing for every show. And like, I did 7 tests in a row, find out I'm pregnant with Bennett, find out he has multiple congenital heart defects. We don't know. We know he's going to have an immediate life-saving surgery. We also don't know what the rest of his life is going to look like. So I was in no position to take any kind of new hit show like I had been working so hard towards. Everything just stopped for me. It stopped. The only thing that mattered was keeping my son alive. But of course, I needed to work. I needed insurance for my child that was costing a fortune in health bills. I wanted to be able to work in some capacity, but I couldn't go away and do a show for 9 months, for 6 months out of the year in Atlanta. That would have never been my choice at that time. And so the alignment with Hallmark at that time in my life was also so perfect, because that's when Megan and I started writing. We could do that from home. And also I could pop out for 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks at a time and do movies. And it was such a beautiful experience. So I just feel so grateful. I've been very, 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 very blessed. And I can't imagine a better audience or better fans than what we have. They're so incredibly supportive. We're so fortunate.
But would you say that playing Dead Stacy in 1995 was the highlight of your career?
Top 5 for sure. Hands down, playing Dead Stacy was one of the greatest. The fact I didn't win an Emmy from that, I'm still upset. I was robbed, I tell you. I was robbed. Awkward was one of the greatest career highlights of my life thus far. Absolutely. That was just so creatively fulfilling, challenging. The writing on that show, Lauren Unerick, Aaron Ehrlich, they just did something so special. And I still can't believe that I was able to be a part of it. So cool.
I don't see Lacey Hamilton, though, being a Hallmark mom.
No, and in fact, people that have seen Awkward, they're like, oh my gosh, you're so different. It's so different. I'm like, well, yeah,
it's called acting.
Yes. Like, yeah, I'm an actor. You should go back and look at some of the really dark stuff I've done. But gosh, that was such a fun show.
All right, so the question I was going to ask was, it was like, because you looking at IMDb, you guys intersect on Taking the Reins, right?
Yes. But
clearly, that's not where you met and where this all began.
Oh,
so,
no.
So take through a little bit about how you guys went, just like you said, it was acting class, right? So just how did this whole relationship go and grow?
Go ahead, Megs. Yeah, from us working, to starting to write together till Taking the Reins?
Well, no, just in general. Well, meeting and then how the... Yeah, yeah, like you guys are in class and... Yeah. Megan, were you looking over and going, oh, she's never going to make it. She's terrible. Or tell me how this relationship
women,
started.
These women are my best people in my life. Like, there's no life without them. I instantly adored Nikki, but I didn't. And this is just, I get teary because it's all taken care of for us. Like, I would have never said, like, oh, I'm going to be a writer, number one. Never would have thought that. I'm going to be a writer with Nikki DeLoach, and we're going to be working for this network, like Nikki just explained, like the best people in all the land that just makes people happy. I would have never thought that. What I thought was, she's incredible. The people at our studio were incredible. And I was just so happy to be in friendship with her. That was how that started, right?
Same.
And we were on our acting journey. I remember the process. I remember so clearly the process when she was auditioning for Awkward. Like, I'm thinking of all these things as she's telling her, answering your questions. I remember being in the am waiting room in the like lobby area of Cedars when Bennett was born, like all these life moments.
Yeah.
This is not an accident. So we were friends, and then cut to my 40th birthday party. And I had an idea come to me. It was an incredible story. And
you'd love it, Eric. It's true crime.
It's true crime. And it makes no sense why someone called me and told me this tale of a female true crime story that took place in a very small town outside of Myrtle Beach. But I knew I had to tell it. But I also knew I couldn't tell it by myself because I'm from Jersey. And I was like, I don't understand inherently these people. And Nick does. It's where she's from. Not that exact area, but Southern Georgia.
The South.
So I shared this story with her at my 40th, just as my friend, my creative friend, my dear friend in life and everything. And she's there at my celebration. And that was what began our partnership. So we started working on this project, and then it morphed into the Hallmark projects. And just to truncate the story and truncate the time, Taking the Reins was the first thing we put together, and I was not supposed to be in it. Obviously it was for Nick.
And I have to just pause for a second, Eric. I had to fight her because we had, not only was this the first one we produced together, we developed, but we did the movie that you see, we had to rewrite. And so that is the movie that you see is our writing. And you don't
have a so credit on it though, right?
No, we did the polish on it, and it was a big polish. It was like a page one. And we were writing out this character of Amanda Carter, and we have gone through three rounds of casting for this role. We are casting out of New York because it's filming in Connecticut. We've done three rounds of casting on this, and we can't find the person. And I'm like, I know, because the person is supposed to be Megan McNulty. And Megan's like, Nikki, I don't have time for this. We have to rewrite.
We're rewriting the movie. I'm like, do you want us to rewrite the movie, or do you want me to put myself on tape for
it? And I'm like, both. I want both. Megan, you are Amanda Carter. You have got to. So she's like, fine, I'll do one scene. So we don't tell the network that this is Megan McNulty, who is also the one that's doing the polish on the script with me, also the one producing. We're like, let's just put it on tape and we'll just send it in. Sure enough, she books the job because she's amazing and she's perfect in this. So
either way. Waking up that morning being like, oh God, what if I don't get the part in our movie?
So
you rewrite the character just to be a horrible person.
Totally.
And it was our first thing together in all these ways. But the amount of trips I had to take from Jersey over the George Washington Bridge to Connecticut where we were shooting, and I'll never, Nikki says it, and I will for the rest of my life on this earth and forever after, like, we'll never get over it.
I never
believe we were actually doing this together. And this movie was
our trailers next to each other.
Yeah. And then
in scenes.
I'm like with her, and
it's crazy.
It was incredible. And we were also crafting a Christmas movie in between takes while we were shooting that. It was so much. And that really sums up what Nikki was saying at the beginning about, like, we're better together and we can't do it without each other. And there were moments, and Nikki was going through a really hard time about
my dad was, you know, I had been in Georgia on the East Coast because my dad was dying.
It's okay, I bring that up, Nick.
And no, it's totally okay. I'm an open book. And in fact, like, I tried to back out of the whole thing like weeks prior and couldn't, you know, like that's how bad it was. Like, so every day I was waking up on set thinking, is this the day I'm going to get the call where my dad is dying? And all I wanted was to be with him. And so it was a really, really, really hard shoot. It was a really hard shoot. And there's no way that I could have done that without Megan. No way.
I watched her, and she's the number one. And she's a leader on set. She is a leader on set always. And then she's coming off of takes, and I'm like, here's the scene I just worked on. And she's writing with me, and people are saying to us, who are you two? How are you doing this? And it just, it was, it's our faith in God. Like we were like, we're just being led. And the full circle moment in that is she got to go be with her dad. I mean, moments after we wrapped and she did it, and that's a whole story. And then cut to years later, as we're literally writing True Justice Family Ties, which it wasn't called True Justice Family Ties at that moment, but my dad passed and we're coming up on the year anniversary of that. And I'm in a hotel in Jersey and I'm planning his funeral. And she's saying to me the same things that we're saying to her, and we're having to like craft this movie. So it's just really, it's like an incredible ride we've been on. And at every turn, that's all the support, but like, we just keep doing what we're doing. And, you know, we take the moments we need to honor and do the life things, but like we do work through it because it's who we are.
And it's all we know to do.
It's so emotional, but yeah, that's kind of our, that's really the truncated like version of our journey together. And it's just beginning. I'm, you know, it's
No, that's fascinating. I just, you know, from the outside and looking at it, I knew you guys were like writing partners. I didn't realize you were like, you know, besties as well, which obviously.
Oh, yeah.
So that's fast. Thank you for sharing all that. And obviously some
tough
stuff.
Thank you for listening.
Some tough stuff to talk about as well. Yeah. All right. So let's talk a little bit about True Justice. So I had Michael Barbeau on, and he said he basically had the idea, went to Hallmark, and Hallmark said you guys would be perfect for it. So what was his idea? Because I'm sure if I ask him his idea, he had like a whole 100-page script, polished characters.
No, it was actually like two paragraphs.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. Like what he had, what he really gave you was.
It was like it was a character. Like a page. It was like a page of an idea, and you know, the stars aligned with it because I will say, Megan and I had been working on this true crime story, which was a beast to break. I mean, it's a person's real life. It's 40 plus years of her life. It is the double homicide murder of her parents and her false conviction. Her false conviction for a crime she didn't commit. And then since them, this police department putting away two other people who also did not commit this crime with zero evidence, Eric, zero evidence.
We have been on this for years.
And we have been on this for years, and we have done so much work in the world of exonerations and the world of the justice system. And we knew how, as an institution and system, here's the balance. Here's the hard conversation about it, right? It is broken in a lot of ways, right? And the reason is because there's human beings at the core that are in these institutions and systems. It's just like the medical system. It's not perfect, right? You have incredible doctors and surgeons and nurses, and then you have some, right, that maybe aren't so incredible, or you have a healthcare system that needs that we're putting band-aids on, that needs like a big overhaul for nurses and for them to be able to do their job. I think all of our systems and institutions are like that. We all really need to, instead of turning a blind eye and being like, they're perfect, they're just the way they are, we have to stop doing that. We have to look at them and say, there are holes in these systems. People get falsely convicted. They get their lives taken away from them. They lose everything. That's not just. We want to fight to live in a world where we can believe in justice and we can believe that justice is actually served. So we did that time with our true crime show. So when this came along and Mike presented it to us, we were like, actually, and we will be honest if we don't think that it's something that we should move forward with, especially something as hard as mystery, to be honest. This was right up our alley, and it was also something we deeply cared about. Exactly. And we, you know, we also very much believe, because of our faith, and I think it's also who we are, but also because of our faith, we believe in redemption. We believe in second chances. And so what we wanted to do with True Justice is, first of all, we were so grateful they came to us. We were so excited about it. And secondly, We wanted to create a world with these young law school students who are coming out, like they are coming at the system with hope, with a new beginning. They haven't been in this for a long time. And that hope is the thing that we all need to hang our hats on. Whether we have been in something for 20 years or 30 years, I've been in this industry since I was 7. I always have to return to hope, right? It's, we can't let go of that. We also can't let go of the fact that every day we need to wake up and push ourselves to do the right thing, even if it's the hard thing. The right thing matters. So we wanted to tell a story about redemption. We wanted to tell a story about hope. We wanted to tell a story about the fact that human beings make mistakes, but we have to try and get it right. We have to try hard. And we wanted to tell a story about waking up every day and people who are just trying to do the right thing in the world to make the world a better place. And we were happy to do it within this mystery and within these 5 fun, incredible characters that we were able to develop and create. But that's the story we really wanted to tell. And that's the stories we want to tell within this series. And I do believe that we accomplished that. And yeah, I do.
And we wanted to tell a story about being better together. And so like when Nick gets something, I mean, and Mike gave us these 5 characters and we saw that hope that they weren't jaded and all the things Nikki just said. And so if there's got to be that hook or that heart pull first that says to us, we can do this, but then also that we can, you know, legitimately do it. And because of our work on the other murder mystery. So it was really just a beautiful confluence. And I do believe we did that.
I will also say Mike Barbuto and Joel Rice are, they are so great to work with. I mean, talk about people who do get story, who are, and who have become amazing mentors for both of us. Truly, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I would text Mike and say, can we jump on a FaceTime really quick? We have a question. We're trying to talk through something.
Right.
And every single time, I'll be there in 5 minutes. Let's do it now. 15 minutes. Jump on, talking it through. I loved every moment of creating this with them. It was a team effort. And they were incredible to work with. Incredible.
And they care so much about the story, but they're so specific like we are. They care so much about the specificity, and that's what
makes
something great. True collaboration.
All right, well, I told you how I'm talking to Lisa Hamilton Daly later tomorrow. Yeah. I'm talking to Mike and Joel and Crystal Lowe, who is got through the whole director initiative. She's doing a rom-com, which isn't necessarily our thing. But she was also Rita in Signed, Sealed, Delivered. So Michael's like, you want this? I'm like, yeah, because I think the story of Crystal and getting her, you know, way to direct is just fascinating. So I'm like, oh, yeah, I'll talk about that all day. So, but yeah, and I get to talk to Mike now again. So I'll make sure I tell him that you guys said he gave you guys a cocktail napkin with 5 names and said, make a story.
All right.
One of the things that was really different about True Justice than any of the other Hallmark mysteries is, like you mentioned earlier, it really is an ensemble cast.
Yeah.
Whereas most mysteries are the lead, the Snoopy, whoever, the Goldie, and then the detective or the DA or whoever.
That's right.
But this one really is all 5 characters. And sure, you had, you know, 2 main ones, but it really was the collective group.
It really was.
So how was having to create that many characters versus really getting to focus on 2?
Hold on. I'll tell you.
Go get it, Nick. Go get it. We seem to only do projects where there's 8 million people, whether it's a complex family drama with the, you know, extended family.
A whole whiteboard in the living room?
It's front and back. I will hide this because it's our Christmas movie we're currently writing on and nobody can know about it. So what we did, we had an amazing writing teacher, Eric. We had an amazing writing teacher who And I think also what made True Justice different is that we fully gave each of those main characters an arc. Yeah, and I find right. this is something that, and I find this is something that is often a struggle with our mysteries. It's like there's the plot, but there also has to be the arc, the emotional arc of their of each character. And I find sometimes that the writers are so focused on the plot, let's just get the plot, that that emotional arc is often not there at all sometimes. And so we really wanted to develop five full characters with a life and a backstory, and give them all arcs, from what can they do at the beginning, at the end of the movie, that they can't do at the beginning of the movie. And we had an incredible writing teacher who we still work with. We still call all the time for help. Like, how do we break this? How do we, you know, and we just did the work. We just took one character at a time and we used her character documents and we broke them. We created an entire history for all of them. And not all of that obviously is going to show up, but it does. And it does, and how they respond to something, because really writing and acting is about, it's about behavior. It's like, how does a character, and this is all based on our acting background and our teacher who taught us our favorite acting technique. I'll never use anything else. Okay. It's like, how is this character responding? How are they behaving? Because people say a lot of things, right? But it's in their behavior that is going to dictate who they are. And so it's like, do they, you know, deflect with humor? Do they, are they in denial? Do they, like, there's a whole list of ways that people can react to things. And so for us, it's like, if you don't know who your characters are, if you haven't done that character work, then how do you know what they're going to say or how they're going to behave in any given scene? And then you're not going to be able to be consistent with that from the beginning of a script to the end of the script. It's like, sometimes you find scripts where it's like, well, the character's doing this in act one and then doing something totally different in act seven. And it's like, those two things don't align. And you can tell that that the time wasn't taken to build out who that character actually is, right? So we cared a lot about doing that. It was hard. I'm not gonna lie, to do five characters within a mystery plot for a first movie, like, you know, the second movie would be so much easier because we've already established them. But that first movie, it's like a pilot. It's really hard.
You got to figure out who each of them are, each five distinct person, and then of course you plop them into the world of this movie, right? But yeah, but that's what we do. I was saying, when you're getting the board, Nick, I don't think we write anything that doesn't have the full family and the extended members of the
family. Oh my gosh.
Every time we're into a project, we're like, we're doing it again. Why are we doing it again?
Why do we have 15 characters?
An indie film with two people the whole time. No, we
don't. Just a long walk and talk.
Well, it gets back to what we said earlier about wanting Hallmark to do three, because as you said, it takes time to build those characters, and most mysteries don't do it in that first one. And
that's like, right.
So that is one of the things that was, I think you guys were very successful at in True Justice. And in our review,
Thank you, Eric.
The thing we mentioned was how all five really did have their stories built out. Now, plenty of room still to grow, but you got to know who all five were, which... Now, I know everyone says you're not supposed to have your favorite kid, but we all have our favorite kid. So of these five, who is your favorite? Who is your favorite character?
Oh, God.
I'm not going to do it, Nick.
Megan, you go.
Don't you throw me under the bus. Beep, beep. It's hard. I mean, I think, and because we created it, it's the characters that come from what we came from in our real lives, right? So, you know, and I honestly hadn't thought of this question.
Megan, your answer is easy, by the way.
I have an answer for me. My two two characters I had the most fun writing was Liam and Sarah. They're, you know, and Liam actually on the page originally was even more of like a jokester and a like one-liners here and there. And then you know, we shifted once we got Alex because he brought his own thing to that character, which was so great. But it was Liam and Sarah, and then Marissa in real life is like, oh my gosh, she's so wonderful. And they all are, by the way. We could not have gotten five lovelier people for this show. But those two were, I think the most fun I had writing were the two of them.
Thank you, Nick. I did have a blast writing Liam with Nikki. I mean, we would just howl. We would howl. We would send Mike lines. Like, what is
the
this?
Magnum PI? The Magnum PI of it.
We just howl. But I did, you know, the Casey of it all.
Yeah.
Just the breadth and depth of like, of what she, her character was facing. Not that, you know, there's not that like my background is anything like that, but like just from what she came from. And I just, yeah, I don't know. I was just thinking of that now, but I do have to say, not one of the five, but I loved writing Professor Ambrose. I channeled my dad.
Aww.
So I do, yes. I do tend to lean towards the, you know, when it comes to the legal jargon,
she does.
I do enjoy writing. Whenever we're doing something that has a military thing, my husband's a commander in the U.S. Coast Guard. My dad was a Vietnam vet. Like I like to write that stuff. I actually enjoy it.
She does. And she's great with it. In fact, once I got to set, because I was coming from a Christmas convention, and I got to set and I pulled up and I realized that I was actually going to have to say the words because Megan wrote like a lot of the legal jargon that Professor Ambrose had to say. And I was like, oh God, now I have to say all this stuff, all these big words, like Megan, like what I was so happy about when we were writing, I was like, oh, now I have to actually say these things and sound really smart. But oh yeah, you killed Professor Ambrose's stuff. That was so good and fun. And a lot of it got cut out of the movie. Obviously, for example, one of the babies that was killed in editing that I was really sad about was a speech that we had. We really wanted to show the audience the humanity that exists inside of this system and why sometimes there's so many mistakes, right? And I wish they would release this actual scene because she goes through the percentages of how many mistakes a human being makes in one day. And so she asked the class, Professor Ambrose, how many mistakes do you think you make in a day? 5 to 10. Most of the class raises their hand, you know, 10 to 20, blah, blah, blah. Like the truth of the matter is we make between 25 and 50 mistakes a day as human beings on average, okay? And then the shock of the room when they hear like, wait, what? Because we don't think we're making that many mistakes. We're not even like aware of how many mistakes we make in a single day. And that whole kind of speech got cut, which I was really sad about, but you have to kill some darlings. And really it's about servicing those five characters, but especially Casey and Eli, and obviously the mystery. So we had to cut something, but that was an important speech that we had crafted for her that I was sad to see cut because I think it speaks so much to what actually ends up happening sometimes. We're human beings. We're trying to do the best that we can, but we make mistakes. And that's why, you know, we have to sometimes have justice warriors come in and pick up the pieces and solve the mystery, the murder.
So, Megan, your answer, correct answer, was supposed to be Sarah. Because
even you look though, just like her.
Right. They got your doppelganger. You weren't in it, so you went and got your doppelganger.
I'm so honored by this connection. And from the moment we were watching like early, you know, edits, I mean, my kids are like, Mom, why are you? You're not in this. I didn't think you were in this. I thought you're writing this.
Totally.
Right.
I mean, it's, and I can't, my friends in Nashville are like, I'm sorry, what's happening? It's, you have a doppelganger.
Right. Absolutely. Totally. The other thing I'll quickly say is Rachel was the murderer, right?
Yes. Rachel Teller.
That one of the things that we thought about that was, and maybe this was the acting, but, or it could have been the writing, or maybe probably both, but how that character, she was the murderer, yet she had that empathy still to her, which, you know, if you're, she's a cold-blooded killer at the end of the day, but somehow you didn't hate her, or you weren't like, well, I wouldn't want to be in the room with her attacking me regardless, but she was like this character who you felt some empathy, some sympathy for, that she was in that situation and reacted that way. So
that's human.
That was a great character.
That's pain.
Thank you so much. I was just going to say, I think so much of why we want to tell a lot of these stories, and why we want to continue with True Justice, and why mystery, we love mystery so much, is a crime is committed and then you have to solve the murder, or you have to solve the case, or whatever it is. But most people, I went to school for psychology. It's a huge passion of mine. I've continued studying in it for many, many, many years. Nobody, unless you're like a serial killer, or, you know, like most people don't wake up and they're like, one day they're like, I'm going to be a murderer. That's just what I'm going to do. There is a life of most of the time trauma and hurt and pain and lack of nurturing, a lack of love, a lack of compassion and kindness and empathy that is given to a person, and nothing ever makes it okay. That's not what I'm saying. But what we are trying to say is that sometimes people get broken because life can be really hard and it can be really painful. And if, as humanity, if we're not there to help people pick up the pieces, help them to heal from trauma, if you're not trying to heal from your own trauma, even in small ways, you lash out at your husband and scream at them, or, you know, you like yell at your kid when you didn't mean to, like, 9 times out of 10, it's a result of something that has not been processed inside of you, that has not been healed inside of you, that is being projected onto someone else. That's on a small scale. On a big scale, it can be murder, right?
Right.
So what we want to do is show that, like, these people just didn't wake up one day and decide to hurt somebody. There's a past and there's a history there. And that story needs to be told too, because we all need to be learning from it.
So you hinted a little bit there. Are you starting, nothing's officially announced, are you starting to at least work on your sequel? Like, yeah,
we've submitted some ideas. That's nice. What we could tell you. Yes, we've submitted ideas, but you can talk it up with Lisa Hamilton Daly when you get on to interview her.
We are,
and just really push that thing up the mountain. And
I say that's our we have two basic whatever soapboxes that we get on. One is about the whole inclusivity, which Hallmark's doing and all of that, which is absolutely fantastic, more so over in the rom-coms. But the second is that there's got to be three of the mysteries, because if you get involved, we get liking it, and then what happens to the character? So we're behind you 100%. All right.
Thank you, Eric.
So when we talked to JC and found out that she is an incredibly talented singer herself, and then we joked about, obviously, you have your background, and we said you guys need to do a karaoke in the next Curious Cater, and then you posted, but it wasn't, I don't think it's the movie, but I think it was you guys just out there having fun doing karaoke. So what is your go-to karaoke? Is it Say No More?
Oh, you are funny. Somebody did their research.
I even listened to it.
Thank you, Eric. Bless your heart. Thank you. I appreciate that. Actually, I'm getting a vocal cord procedure done because I lost my voice. You can hear it in True Justice. I like literally couldn't talk off camera because I had lost my voice. I got a virus just before the convention, went to Kansas, had to kind of talk over this, you know, after recovering from the virus, I lost my voice and I had to talk over it, and it bruised my vocal cords and gave me a giant polyp on my vocal cord. Yikes. So I actually didn't get to sing at karaoke, but I danced for 5 hours straight and I cheered on everybody else. So I'm going to get this procedure done. So the next time I'm back in Vancouver filming Curious Cater, JC and I can have at it. I love singing songs from the 90s. I love Taylor Swift. I love Bonnie Raitt.
But what's the go-to? What's the go-to?
Oh my goodness, the go-to?
I'm giving you the microphone. You're singing one. What are you singing?
Angel from Montgomery, Bonnie Raitt, maybe.
All right.
It's a slow one. So, you know, it would come like maybe in the middle of the night when everybody needs a little break. They need to go sit down. They need to sip their cocktail. You know, that's when I would come in. Or like right. I would go like, you know, Beastie Boys or something and just do the complete opposite.
Nice. All right. Megan, can you sing?
Can I sing? I was the dancer who sang when I was doing musical theater. I'm married to an amazing singer. I do sing, not as much in my later years, but I had my years in New York with my bestie Scotty, and we went to karaoke like every other night.
And so, Belinda, what would your karaoke? Carlisle, what's your go-to?
Heaven is a Place on Earth, Belinda Carlisle, and Tiffany.
Nice.
Now, and then a really odd song. I think it was like in Boogie Nights, Brand New Key, Roller Girls song, but I got a brand new, I'm not going to try to sing.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, those were our go-tos. I don't do it as much anymore. No, I leave
you're Belinda Carlisle. All right. You win. Sorry, Nikki.
Hey.
All right. Well, I cannot thank you guys enough. We talked forever, but I do want to do one last thing. Nikki, I just want to, I know you talked about it a little before with the Children's Hospital of Los Angeles. And right now, I know you're working and doing some fundraising for them. Can you just tell a little bit about like why it's so important and what some people can do to be involved and help the cause? As you said, it's just the whole mission of the hospital is great.
Thank you, Eric. I appreciate that so much. This is the thing that, I mean, like I have the best job in the world, the best job in the world, but working for this hospital, it's the thing that it gets me up in the morning. It, makes me emotional. Oh, what they do is so incredible. I mean, yes, they saved my son's life, right? 3 heart surgeries and we're continued, care at Children's Hospital. We are in hematology. We are in pulmonology. We are in ENT. We are in neurology. We are in all of those areas because the heart impacts every piece of the body. So we're in continued care there, and Bennett will need another heart surgery. But when he was in his very first heart surgery, and we were at the hospital for like a month in the first one, because he was 5 days old when he had the first one, and it was extremely complicated, dangerous surgery. I would roam the halls, and I didn't really know anything about the hospital at that moment in time, only that they had the best pediatric heart surgeon in the country there, who I was blessed enough to have saved my son's life. And I would see these little babies, and I'd ask like, where are their parents? And they, you know, the nurses would say like, well, a lot of these families have to work 3 and 4 jobs and their bosses don't let them off to come and be with their children or else they would lose their job. And, you know, their families without insurance and with very little funds. And I'm like, how could they afford this heart? I knew how much that heart surgery was costing and I was lucky enough to have insurance, but they didn't. I was like, how is this happening? This is incredible. It blew my mind because in my ideal world, every hospital is Children's Hospital of Los Angeles. And in my ideal, you know, if we really could bring heaven to earth, which is Megan and I and our faith, that's the goal. How do we bring heaven to earth? How do we make this place feel more and more and more and more like heaven? It looks a lot like me that you don't have to go bankrupt you to save your life. You don't have to, you know, be a privileged person to get great health care, whether it's a child or an adult. Like that should be off the table. You should be able to have access to good health care no matter what. And so I wanted to be involved. And at first it was just in a spokesperson capacity. And then they asked me to join the board. And then 2 years ago, they asked me to become the president of the board of trustees. And our main goal is to raise money for the hospital so that children can have continued access to this care, no matter their financial situation or health insurance. 2/3 of our families are on something called Medi-Cal, which means you make $26,000 or less a year to qualify. That is nothing in the state of California or Los Angeles. That is nothing. That is, I mean, I'll tell you, one of the families we do at Christmas, this program where you can fulfill a family's Christmas wish list. And it's a family that's having to spend the holidays in the hospital. And this is very telling. This was the first year that I did it. Bennett had just had his first heart surgery. He was, you know, 3 months old, 4 months old. And the mother asked for toilet paper, not clothes or makeup or a nice purse. She asked for toilet paper. And to this day, it just breaks me because it's like, you know, we should be better than that. And so Children's Hospital of Los Angeles aims every single day to be better than that. And the work they do is extraordinary. And it's not just for children in the Los Angeles area. 700,000 kids went through that hospital last year, and it's kids from all over the country. I've gotten kids transferred from so many states in this country because the specializations that they do at Children's Hospital, they are world renowned. We are the top pediatric cancer division in the country. We have one of the top cardiology divisions in the country, the top ortho divisions in the country. The sickest of the sick kids come to us. And we are number four listed as number four in the world in terms of specialty hospitals for children. So we get kids not only from all over the world, but from all over the country, which is why it's like, it might not feel important to you because you live in Kansas, but I'm going to tell you, I truly believe that there's no such thing as other people's children. And you hope that you never need a place like Children's Hospital of Los Angeles. However, for the day that you wake up and you do, you are going to be so grateful that they exist. So every dollar goes to that hospital. We are in a big fundraising campaign right now called Make March Matter. If you live in Los Angeles, or even if you don't, you can order from some of these shops. You can go into Alfred's Coffee and buy a coffee. You can go to Panda Express anywhere in the country. They'll ask you to round up. And if you do, the part of that proceeds go to Children's Hospital of Los Angeles. And actually, Panda Express was honored in 2022 because they have been one of our greatest and most long-term giving companies for the hospital. There's a whole wing named after Panda Express because of all that they have given to our hospital. So you can give back in so many ways. And trust me, that 7 cents or that 10 cents that you round up, it all makes a difference. So thank you for bringing attention to it. Thank you for bringing awareness to it. It is a cause that is just so near and dear to my heart. Because I truly just believe there's no such thing as other people's children.
That's awesome. Yeah. And like you say, it's the, you don't think about it until you need it. And then you're very, very glad that it's there.
Absolutely.
And we could have, if we wanted to go into the whole healthcare conversation, we could have done this whole thing.
Totally.
45 minutes of that.
Totally.
And not made any progress.
There's so so much work to do.
I do feel your pain. I understand exactly what you're saying. So, okay. Yeah. Well, this has been completely enjoyable. Thank you very much. You share so much insight into everything that you guys do. You're completely generous with your time. So that I have to thank you very much for that too. So.
Oh, Eric, you. I also wanted to say to you, truly from my heart, I listen to all of your podcasts. And I do because, and Megan too, because I really believe, like, number one, our audience, especially our mystery audience, they are so sharp and they are so smart. And like, you have said things that I've gone, oh my gosh, absolutely, yes. And it's something that I clock in my brain and I say, next time I'm going to be very aware of that, or they are so right about that. And we want to make sure, like, I'm listening. We are listening to
the pressure's on.
No. But it's true. And the support that you have given to our network. I mean, when Curious Caterer started, it was the last ditch effort to save the mystery channel. They didn't know that they weren't going to continue. Remember, they were getting rid of the mysteries. And then we did One Curious Caterer, and it relaunched the Mystery Network. And now we are pivoting, and it is just going to be a Mystery Channel. And what a success. But we could not have done that, truthfully. The reason why they did another Curious, and then they did another Mystery, and another Mystery, is because of the audience, the social media response, the response from people like you guys, who not only made a lot of noise about it, but kept showing up in terms of ratings. That is the reason why we are doing a whole network that is just about mysteries. So thank you for your support. Thank you for your thoughtfulness and really thinking about these things and going on this journey with us. It challenges us, I know Megan and myself, to be better writers, to be better storytellers, to deliver things to you that is on the level of your intelligence, and that makes you go for a ride for 90 minutes and at the end of that be like, that was worth the 90 minutes of my time to watch that. So I just want to say thank you to you for all of you, for all that you do, and to all of the listeners for all of your support. It truly means the world. It does.
Yeah, thank you. I echo all of that.
Well, to say thank you for making it easy then. So, okay. Well, have a great
day. Better together. Thank you.